fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
We're having an argument already, and Pat comes in early to join in on this. That's not what the 00 status means. They didn't make this black woman a James Bond. They gave her James Bond's 00 moniker because he left. So it doesn't make her James Bond.
Right. But James Bond is gone. It's a James Bond movie.
No, James Bond comes back and he wants to come back in, but she's got his 00 status because he lost it.
Oh, so how do we replace you with a transgendered Asian? How does that happen? Can we get that into effect?
I would love that, but let me use that as an example. They wouldn't become Glenn Beck.
Oh,
they
gosh.
Would just be the host.
Are you working for the film company
here? Oh, my
here?
God.
This is agonizing.
This is the Glenn Beck program.
No, there's plenty of reasons to be pissed off at the Broccoli family. But this is being construed differently.
Oh.
Oh, man. You know what?
Can't wait to hear that.
I have some cowboy boots. From Tecovas. And the nice thing about them is I can place them not so gently into the rear ends of people like Pat and Stu. And they're nice. They're handmade. Mm-hmm. They're you know, hand-stitched. They're very, very nice boots. But they are able to go deep into some because... You know, they got that cowboy flair there at the front, and I like it extra pointy just so it can be inserted easier. Tecovas is a great boot. They're built to last using only the best materials, lizard, alligator, ostrich, some of the most exotic leathers. No shortcuts. They are comfortable right out of the box. If you're looking for a great Western boot or a good cowboy boot, one that you can wear with a suit, one that you could wear on the ranch, this is it. Tecovas, they are about half the price of any boot in its class. So I want you to look at these, and you can order them. It's free shipping and free returns. So ordering is risk-free. If it's not the right size, you don't like it for some reason or another, you can return it. Tecovas, they always err on the side of their customers. Find your pair now of Tecovas at tecovas.com/Beck. That's Tecovas, tecovas.com/Beck. We can only hope that I have another vocal cord experience this summer. Oh, that would be great.
We could bring in a black woman to replace you.
We could. We could. Mm-hmm. We could. And I wouldn't have a problem with that.
No, it's time. I think it's time, right?
No,
for a little diversity.
You know, if there was a black woman that had, you know, my traits, having her on, mm-hmm. giving her opinions on this show would be fine.
Well, of course it would.
Right.
Yes.
Your problem is you think James Bond is being replaced by a black woman, and James Bond is a guy.
So
that's
true. So you're the problem.
I'm the problem here.
Yeah.
Jesus, love of feet.
I just
tired. No, you want to have it. Wait, wait, wait.
Of the diversity.
Right. If you want to have a
mandate.
Problem, I know. If you want to have a problem, have a problem with the guy who is replacing James Bond as James Bond. He's always been a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a black man. He's always been a white guy. If you want to have that conversation, okay.
What is he now?
He's white.
He's still white.
James Bond, yes.
Who's replacing Daniel Craig?
The guy, he's a great actor. Don't remember his name. He's a black guy, but not in this Bond movie.
But not in this one. Is becoming Bond.
What?
Right? A black guy is becoming
Bond.
Yeah,
is becoming Bond. And so, you know, if you want to just, you know, flush all of the history of this guy. It was like when what's his name, did one Bond movie, and he was like sensitive and... Oh, you know, I'm not going to be bad with
Timothy
women.
Dalton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's not James Bond.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We know who James Bond is. He's a white guy from Scotland.
Right.
We got it.
Yeah.
Okay. He's not a black guy.
Right.
Now, that one you could have an intellectual argument over on. Let's stop changing the stories. Can we please stop changing the stories just for political correctness? Mm-hmm. But And then can we move on with our lives? Because it's freaking James Bond. The 007 status in this particular movie, James Bond is still Daniel Craig. And James Bond is pissed because his 00 status is gone and he wants it back from the new person that has that 00 status. And so he's still James Bond.
Right. So, and then they're just, so basically what they've come up with a way to justify the diversity move here in the story, and you're accepting it. That's essentially what we're learning.
I'm trying not to hate everybody and everything.
No, I just,
I'm trying not to be. Guys, I was just in New York for the last week.
Well, I know. And speaking
of
that,
it is the worst.
Like Hamilton was interesting because I don't know if you know this. Alexander Hamilton wasn't black.
What? Shut up.
What are you talking
about? No, he wasn't. He was
Shut
a white
up.
Guy. He was a white guy. Now, if we, what if you'd made Martin Luther King
a white guy?
Can you imagine the
hang on just a second. Wait. So would you have a problem? Because I wouldn't. Would you have a problem with a great actor who happened to be black playing one of our founders if it wasn't all about this stupid diversity thing? So in other words, a great actor could play Malcolm X or Martin Luther King. It would be hard. You have to go farther away.
Let's go the other way. Is it okay for, you know, a white person to play black people? We look back at that in history and we say that's negative, right? We look back at blackface and say that's a bad idea unless you happen to be governor of Virginia. It's a really bad idea.
Right, because it was demeaning. If you played the role right, it still would not be acceptable in our society because of political correctness.
But it's just also dumb. Right, like there's you know what, there's black people and black founders, by the way. Yeah. They can have black people play the black founders. It'd be great to see some freaking movies about that.
I'd love to see that.
Tell the real story.
It would.
Which we've done.
It would.
Then you see Scarlett Johansson getting in trouble because she said she should be able to play anyone she wants. Right. She should be able to play any tree
or whatever it was
that she wants. Mm-hmm. And that's being seen as this like, oh my gosh, I can't believe.
How dare she? Well, because she got a role taken from her because she's not trans. So I guess now only trans people can play a trans role.
And
I
think stupid.
It's stupid.
And like, it's stupid. But wait a minute. Hang on just a second. What's the difference between white and black?
Right, exactly. I think it's just the real visibility, right? I think Daniel Craig took some heat at the beginning when he was named Bond because he was too short. Like this guy's too short to be Bond. People noticed that.
Well, no, yeah, but that's ridiculous.
Well, but it's not.
Tom Cruise is 5'1".
Right, but Tom Cruise is playing like Tom Cruise
is standing on a box. Like 5'7". You just can't see him standing on
the
box.
And because it's hidden, you can't do that with skin color. It's just a really obvious trait.
Right.
Right. Right. You can't do it like even if it's like long hair. Right. Like there's things that you can alter to make the person appear like the person they're playing. And so you do those things. You can't do it with skin color. That's why it's the most obvious
one. I have to tell
you. Or gender.
The hate here. We need Marianne Williamson here. because the hate that is happening on this show right now.
Overwhelming.
Overwhelming.
That's true.
Now, I don't know. Yeah. Did you guys hear the Marianne Williamson prayer? Mm.
I have not yet.
Now, this is not cult-like at all. This does not feel like some sort of spooky, you know, what's that name of that movie, Somar, or something? That movie that's out right now? Yeah. It's nothing like this.
Definitely doesn't sound like Get Out Part 2.
No.
There's definitely no.
No.
You're not going to feel that here.
Here it is.
As I speak, I'm going to ask the white Americans in the room to please repeat after me.
Okay.
On behalf of myself and on behalf of my country, to you and all African Americans, from the beginning of our nation's history, in honor of your ancestors and on behalf of your children, please hear this from my heart.
Can't be from your
heart. I apologize. Please forgive us. With this prayer, I acknowledge the depth of the evils that have been perpetrated against black people in America.
It's too long.
about in America.
From slavery to lynchings to white supremacist laws to the denial of voting rights to all the ways, both large and small, all of them evil. All of them wrong. For all the oppression and all of the injustices, I apologize.
Is this a never-ending prayer?
Yes. Yeah, I know. The Lord is like, okay, all right. I got it. For the love of Pete. Okay, so does she then say, now, turn around and reverse this?
Oh, surely they just left that out of the video.
So she doesn't do that. Are you saying
that black people have to apologize for something, Glenn?
I think all Americans need to apologize for a lot of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. We've done that on this show where I've come out and said, hey, I made some mistakes and I apologize. It's always good to apologize. It's always good to recognize someone else's pain. But it can't be a one-way street unless it's God on the other end. When you're apologizing to God, you don't go, well, it's your turn now. Okay, he has nothing to apologize for, but everybody else has something to apologize for. There's nothing wrong with this recognition if it would just stop there. But this isn't going to stop there.
Well, except these aren't the people that are responsible for slavery and discrimination laws.
Yeah, that's where the real issue is.
I know.
It's not them.
And
they didn't do it.
What a creepy moment if you happen to be one of the African Americans there.
Like, they're being touched the entire time
throughout the 12-minute prayer. And they've got their hands on the guys. There's like apologizing. Wouldn't you? I mean, every African American I think I've ever met would be like, dude, first of all,
get
hands off.
Yeah.
Second of all, you don't need to apologize to me for something that you weren't even alive for.
Agree with you, and I think many African Americans agree with that as well. The ones who are
going to Marianne Williamson prayers.
pull themselves up by the bootstraps, they are not there. However, we do know that it is important through AA and through all religious organizations, it is important to recognize the pain of others and just to say it's good and I apologize, I am with you, blah blah blah. But the problem with it is it doesn't stop there. Now I have to pay you reparations. No, wait a minute, what? I'm recognizing your pain. I had nothing to do with you causing your pain, but I am recognizing your pain because you are a human being just like I am. And when I have pain, it feels good for somebody to come up to me and say, I'm sorry for the loss of your mother. Okay, you didn't kill my mom, dude. Why are you sorry? Because I'm recognizing your pain. And so when it stops at that, I'm sorry for your loss. When it stops there... Okay, but it doesn't stop there. What happens is, I'm sorry for the loss of your mother. I know. Thank you for that. Now, pay me money.
Right. I mean, I know Williamson in particular is advocating for about $500 billion in reparations.
Well, we have it.
We've got plenty of extra money.
Yeah.
We're the richest nation on earth.
Yeah.
That's the least we can do.
Amen.
It's the least we can do.
I think she's the one that said it was anything under $100 billion is an insult. Like, it would be if we gave African Americans, and again, how you'd figure out who gets the money and who doesn't, whatever, that's impossibly complicated. But if we gave them only $99 billion, that would be an insult. Just the $99 billion.
What about the African Americans that would find it insulting to take reparations? And what about the African Americans who didn't have here?
Well, here's the thing: we don't need any more black faces that aren't black voices.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, no. You can't do that right before I go into a commercial. You cannot do that. Stand by. Forget you heard that, because that is another can of worms we're about to open up. According to studies, just over 10% of break-ins are planned beforehand. The rest are spur of the moment, crimes of opportunity. In other words, random. People come up to a house, they see it doesn't have home security. It's 300 times more likely to be broken into. That's crazy. What's even worse is only 1 in 5 homes have security. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It's too expensive. It's a pain in the butt. I don't own the house. Whatever it is. Home security systems, when they're triggered, the other problem is a lot of times police assume that it's a false alarm and the call goes to the bottom of the list. But Simply Safe uses their video verification technology to visually confirm the break-in, allowing police to get to the scene 3.5 times faster than with other home security companies. It's a game changer. Still no contract, no hidden fees, no fine print. Around-the-clock monitoring is $15 a month. You own the system. It's simple. It's Simply Safe. They have a great deal going on right now. SimplySafeBeck.com. Get a free HD security camera when you order. That's a $100 value, a free HD security camera at SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now. SimplySafeBeck.com. We pause for 10 seconds. Station ID. All right. So, you know, it's called the gang. It's the squad.
The squad.
The squad.
Yes.
The squad.
Named after, I think, Taylor Swift.
Her people were the squad. They're not a posse anymore. They're a squad.
Right.
Well, it's the mod squad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
They're a modern squad. It's the mod squad.
And there's nothing more diverse, I think, than Taylor Swift.
I like to call them the four horsewomen of the apocalypse.
You may be right. Uh-huh. You may be right.
I think they might be.
Okay, so there's a couple of things. First of all, at the Netroots over the weekend, I think we have this, Stu. I just saw it a few minutes ago. At the Netflix conference, somebody took the stage and said, not Netflix, Netroots, and said, you know, we don't need any more black faces that don't want to be black voices.
Yeah, it was, I believe it was Brown, to be clear. We don't need any more brown faces that don't want to be a brown voice from Presley. I think we do have the clip here. Do we have that?
For whatever lived experience and identity that you represent, if you are not prepared to come to that table and to represent that voice, don't come. Because we don't need any more brown faces that don't want to be a brown voice. We don't need black faces that don't want to be a black voice.
Oh,
we don't need Muslims that don't want to be a Muslim voice. Queers that don't want to be a queer voice.
Queer is made. What a wonderful recovery the word queer is made.
Yeah, okay.
What an incredible achievement.
And if you're worried about being marginalized and stereotyped, please don't even show up. Because we need you to represent that voice.
No, what we need you to do is represent your district and all of the voices in your district. You are a representative for your district. See, this is the problem. This is what our real problem is in America. We have decided, somehow or another, that anybody who goes to Washington is supposed to represent their voice, their people. No, you're supposed to represent the people in your district. White, black, yellow, brown, doesn't matter. All of those people and only those people. You're not there to speak for America. You're there to speak for the people who put you into office. This is the problem that our founders saw with national government.
And of course, putting yourself, always defining yourself by some characteristic, the color of your skin, your sexual preference, whatever it is. It's always this sort of group identity. But I mean, again, and you may have noticed that at times it's not a great idea to call public officials racist, Glenn. I don't know if you've discovered that yet in your life.
I've seen that lesson taught once.
But apparently you're the only one who's heard it. Because one of the easiest ways to figure out if something is racist, if you're just not sure, is to reverse the colors. So if a representative were to come out today in the news and say, we don't need any more white faces that don't want to be a white voice, do you think the media would notice that comment?
I'm hearing how
they're dealing with Donald Trump tweets right now.
Try this. We don't want any Christian that doesn't want to be a Christian voice. She just said, we don't want any Muslims that don't want to be a Muslim voice. Well, wait a minute. That's kind of scary, isn't it?
Hey, I mean, like, at least... at the very least, at least Muslim Christian is an ideology, right? It's at least a collection of beliefs.
Yeah,
black
I know, but
is not a collection of beliefs. White is not a collection of beliefs. It's just a color.
So what does
it should
that mean?
Be completely meaningless.
Does
right.
that mean that we only want to hear from black people who are progressive? Is that
well,
what the
100% right?
What she's saying?
She's saying I don't want Tim Scott.
Right.
Right. Like I don't. Yes. I don't want.
If you're a conservative black, you're not really a black voice.
Right.
And we don't want to hear from you.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Exactly. I mean,
if you're Hispanic and you're conservative, you don't have a Hispanic voice. You don't have a brown voice.
Right. I mean, like with all of these things are coming out. Well, these racist tweets by Donald Trump against people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, he must hate all people with any Hispanic descent. Well, I don't know. Did he hate the guy that you guys got fired this week, Acosta, who he had as labor secretary? Yeah. Did he hate him? Because, I mean, you guys all pressured him. He had one of the most powerful jobs in the world. Now he doesn't. You're actually taking jobs away from Hispanics. But no, we have to completely ignore these things. The idea that you can say that you want someone who's going to speak for a race is so fundamentally at odds with what we were supposed to do.
And I have to tell you, though, I think it's all coming undone. I really do. Look at their polling numbers, which surprisingly was an internal DNC poll leaked by someone in the DNC. They're taking out their own now. The other side is starting to fight back. Mm-hmm. They're at 9% approval rating.
Alon Omar 9%.
Nine. That's not a big posse or troop
squad.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
All right. Thank you very much. American Financing. It's never too late to buy a home. In fact, it's the perfect time to buy. Interest rates keep dropping, and as summer goes on, sellers are more open to negotiation. You might even get a better deal, but you're going to save a lot of money. You might even actually end up with a house payment that is less than a rental payment. That's how low interest rates are right now. Some mortgage loan officers may charge a commission fee of 1%, which can cost you thousands of dollars in the end. Instead, I want you to call the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. There's never any pressure, no upfront fees, just custom loans and dedicated service. Loans designed for you, for the best interest of you. Not what's best in the interest of the bank. It's American Financing. Call them now, 800-906-2440, or go online to AmericanFinancing.net. AmericanFinancing.net, 800-906-2440. Call them now.
Did the RNC collude against Trump in 2016? Tim Alberta says yes in a new book. It's out today. It's called American Carnage. He joins us next.
Man, I'm really excited to welcome a brand new sponsor to the show, Tecovas. I know how ridiculous a great pair of boots can cost. Tecovas makes great boots and accessories. They sell their boots directly to the customer, so their boots are half the price of anything that's even similar in quality. They're all handmade with a 200-step process with only the best materials. Their entire line honors the timeless traditional boot styles. No silly stitching or sequins or loud colors or anything else. These are just great boots like my grandfather would have worn. With Tecovas, there's no need to break them in. They arrive already ready to be worn immediately, comfortably. They're easy to order with tremendous customer service. Tecovas always has free shipping and free returns. Check out their boots and their clothing and accessories right now. Tecovas.com/Beck. That's TECOVAS.com/Beck. Welcome to the program. We wanted to have Tim Alberta on with us. His new book just came out today, American Carnage, and I would imagine it's going to get a lot of coverage in the media because people will say this is an anti-Trump book. However, I just got this copy today, so I don't know. But there are a lot of interesting things in this book, and everybody is on the record in this. This is not a hatchet job, at least that I can see at this point. Tim Alberta is with us, author of American Carnage. Is this a bash Trump book?
Good morning, Glenn. Well, no, I don't think it's a bash Trump book. In fact, I sat with the president in the Oval Office for a pretty lengthy interview for the book,
right.
And I think that I was awfully fair to him, and I actually just got off the phone with somebody at the White House about 20 minutes ago and had a nice conversation about the book.
Okay.
I think the book examines the president and his administration for what it is, nothing more, nothing less.
So it was interesting to me because there's a lot of things in here that I have never heard before. For instance, the way Pence went and was kind of pursuing Donald Trump, which I didn't know, and the things that he had done trying to say, well, if this doesn't happen, you know, then this vice presidency is not supposed to happen. And he actually spent the weekend with Donald Trump, and what he said about Trump afterwards was pretty remarkable, I thought.
Yeah, you know, their relationship is, I think, pretty poorly understood, and it's obviously an incredibly important relationship because most people in the president's orbit, and I think the president himself, believe that he would not have won the election in 2016 without Mike Pence on the ticket.
Right.
And obviously, they're two very different individuals. I've covered Mike Pence for a number of years. I know him and know the people around him pretty well. And Pence went from being the pursued to being the pursuer very, very quickly, and it was very surprising to many of his friends. And mm-hmm. essentially, the backstory in a nutshell, Glenn, is that once Pence actually met Trump and spent the weekend with him and got to know his family, and they played golf together a couple of times, he sort of became convinced that the caricature of Donald Trump was very different from the person, Donald Trump. And that began this very sort of odd couple relationship. And I don't need to go chapter and verse on all the differences between the two men. But Pence came away from all of it thinking, you know what, not only do I like this guy, but I would love to get on a ticket with this guy.
Yeah, he said that he is really inquisitive. And you don't get that from the president at a distance, that he was constantly asking Pence questions about everything. And he said he was extremely sharp. Again, another thing that you don't really get from the mainstream media and Donald Trump's appearances.
Yeah, Trump's executive style here is pretty interesting. He has never been, you talk to people who work with him in the business world, he's never been somebody who wants long meetings, a very structured day, conference calls, things like that. Trump essentially gets information by quizzing people, almost interrogating people, like mm-hmm. rapid-fire style, and he kind of takes what he needs and he discards the rest. And that has been sort of his reputation in business and now in politics. And it's funny, Glenn, if you talk with, you know, Republican lawmakers who will go over to the White House, they'll sort of walk out of there in a daze, and they're not quite sure what just happened, and they think that he absorbed some of the things they were trying to tell him. And in reality, to Trump's mind, you know, 90% of what they're telling him, he doesn't care about. He feels like it's ephemeral or that it's peripheral to the matter at hand. And he is sort of trying to filter out some of the political BS and just sort of focus on, you know, the crux of what it is they're trying to get him to do or not do, you know, depending on the day.
I was interested in the part of the book where you're talking about AOC, that Trump admires her. And this is really very, you have to really understand the context here. But he admires her and says she's Evita.
Ava Perón, Evita. Yeah, it was probably the most surprising moment in our interview. And as a quick way of background, we were talking about populism, and I was trying to understand from the president, you know, philosophically, what does it mean to be a populist? And so I was asking him, for instance, about, you know, AOC had proposed this tax on the ultra wealthy. And I was asking him, you know, because there was polling showing at the time, you know, a whole body of polling showing that this wasn't popular just among liberals, but actually there are a lot of blue collar conservatives who don't mind at all this idea of a tax on the very, very wealthiest members of society. So I was trying to get at that with the president, and he was pretty evasive on that question. But then unsolicited, he basically started writing a love letter to AOC and telling me how, you know, on the one hand, he doesn't think she knows anything and that, you know, she's got a lot of learning to do and that she's over her skis, but he was enamored of her. And he, you know, I just reading between the lines, he did not say this verbatim, Glenn, but I could sort of tell that Donald Trump, I think, sees in AOC a little bit of himself, which is to say that he sort of exposed the old Republican establishment as kind of feeble and slow and incompetent and a little bit complacent. And AOC has really begun to do the same thing to the Democratic establishment. And I think he sort of tips his cap to her and recognizes the talent that she has in kind of overturning the old order.
Right. And so it's not a love affair with her policies or anything else. He just because I think the same thing. She's effective until I saw the DNC polling numbers that they leaked out about her, where, you know, they have around 9% popularity in the country, which is pretty astounding. Can we go to the TikTok, if you will, of the Access Hollywood crisis?
Sure.
Tell the story of what happened that day.
Well, you know, the short version is that this is Friday morning in October, and on that Sunday night, Trump was preparing to debate Hillary Clinton in St. Louis. It was their second presidential debate. So they were holed up in the 25th floor in a conference room at Trump Tower, and it's Donald Trump and Chris Christie at a table. Chris Christie is portraying Hillary Clinton in this debate prep session, and Reince Priebus, the chairman of the party, he's acting as the moderator. And the president's advisors and some of his family members are in the room, and they're all kind of offering some feedback. And one by one, everyone in the room starts to leave, which is pretty unusual. And at one point, Reince Priebus looks up, and he kind of scans the room, and it's just the three of them, he and Trump and Christie. And Priebus says to Trump, you know, when everybody leaves the room at the same time, something's going on. And at that moment, Trump, who hadn't really realized it either, he looks outside of the room and he can see through the plate glass doors that all of his high command of the campaign is gathered, sort of whispering in hushed tones just outside of the conference room. And Trump yells at them. He says, yeah, what the hell is going on out there? And there's this long passing moment where nobody quite knows what's happening. And finally, the door swings open, and Hope Hicks, the communications director for the campaign, she comes in, hands a stack of papers to Donald Trump. We know now that that stack of papers was a printed out email exchange with a Washington Post reporter who had obtained that Access Hollywood tape. And Trump is reading through the remarks, and he suddenly stops very abruptly when he sees some of the vulgar remarks. And he says, this doesn't sound like me. I don't think this is me. And Reince Priebus is losing his mind at this point because he's saying, what the hell is going on? Somebody please tell me something. So Trump gives the papers to Reince Priebus. Priebus sees the same comments, and he basically immediately says, this is fatal. I mean, we're done. This is it. This is as bad as it gets. Really, the only person in the room at that point who thought that it wasn't lethal to the campaign was Jared Kushner, and he pipes up and says, you know, I don't think it's all that bad. And everyone sort of rolled their eyes. But basically, everyone else in the room that day, from Steve Bannon to Dave Bossie, Kellyanne Conway, the president's children, they all thought that this was it, that he was toast. And, you know, explain how he survived the weekend, essentially.
Did the president feel that he was toast, or did he know, I can get past this?
You know, from everything my reporting has told me, Glenn, that was the one moment in the campaign where he felt like that things were probably cooked, that he was already fighting a little bit of an uphill battle, that, you know, he had professionalized the campaign a little bit and surrounded himself with some really good people who are veterans and who had a lot of polling and you know, data analytics to show him that this was going to be really tough, that he'd really have to pull off an inside straight. But they weren't pessimistic up until that point. I think that weekend it did hit Trump that, you know, I probably am going to lose. But that made him all the more defiant, frankly. He was going to lose on his terms. He wasn't going to be pushed out of the race.
So there's another piece here from the RNC colluding with Rubio's campaign and the South Carolina GOP to stack the debate hall against Trump heading into that primary. And I remember that it was quite a lively debate in South Carolina. But this is the same thing that the DNC was doing to Bernie Sanders in favor of Hillary Clinton, is it not?
Yeah, well, it's similar. I think the difference is that, you know, Hillary Clinton was always looking at a coronation as the Democratic Party's nominee. And obviously there were some folks in the party establishment on that side who were just sort of annoyed with Bernie Sanders and kind of viewed him as a pest and wanted to get him out of the way. Whereas on the Republican side, Donald Trump was becoming a runaway train after winning the New Hampshire primary by nearly 20 points.
Yeah.
everyone in the party apparatus who had sort of scoffed at Trump for the better part of the past year was suddenly coming to terms with the fact that this guy was not only the front runner, but probably the prohibitive front runner, because he had placed second in Iowa and then he had, you know, cleaned everyone's clock in New Hampshire. So there was this reckoning, Glenn, after the New Hampshire primary. They had 10 days until South Carolina. And during that period of time, I document it in the book, you had, you know, senior party officials reaching out to top party consultants, talking about trying to orchestrate some sort of 11th hour kind of pirate operation to take down Trump. You had all kinds of talk about Oppo leaks. You had Mark Short, who of course now works in the White House, a very prominent White House official, but Mark Short at the time was running the Koch brothers political network, and he went to Wichita and asked them for $10 million to take down Trump on Super Tuesday. Essentially, the fear among all of these folks was that if he won South Carolina, he would then have such a head of steam heading into Super Tuesday that this thing was going to be a run away. And so what the RNC actually did, and that's Sean Spicer, who of course became press secretary, Sean Spicer and Katie Walsh and some others inside the RNC, they got together with the South Carolina Republican Party, the chairman which is a guy named Matt Moore. He did not like Trump. And they got together with the Rubio campaign, and essentially they stacked the debate hall with Rubio supporters who drowned out Trump in booze, basically everything he said that night.
Wow. How did Spicer end up on Trump's team?
Well, how did any of these people wind up on Trump?
I mean, he was working for the he was working against the president. Well, I guess they all kind of were. Priebus was as well. That's a stupid question. I retract that.
It's true, though. Throughout the book, that's a recurring thing where these people who were very anti-Trump during the campaign wind up with roles in the, including Pompeo, right, which is something I had never heard before from the book. Tim, can you go through Pompeo and?
Can I take a break and have you come back?
Oh, okay.
Just take a break and then we'll come back in just a second. More. The name of the book is American Carnage. On the front lines of the Republican Civil War and the rise of President Trump. Our sponsor this half hour is realestateagentsitrust.com. If you are looking to buy or sell a home, these are the people that you need to have on your side. Realestateagentsitrust.com. All you do is you go to the website, you tell us where you live, you're looking to buy or sell, and we have a response usually within an hour. I mean, I think it's usually within 5-10 minutes, but we respond right away and we show you the person that you need to connect with there, and they call you. If you're open to it, they will call you, and it's the person that we believe has the values, the principles, the track record, and the performance level of being able to look you in the eye and say, yeah, I can sell your home and I can sell it for this amount of price, this amount of money, and I think that we can get it done quickly. There are also the people that will help you move into a new home, get the right price for that new home, and make sure you're in the right neighborhood. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com. We have Tim Alberta on. He is the author of American Carnage. It's a book that is out today and really fascinating. We only have about 2.5 minutes, so this is really unfair to ask you. But I'm fascinated by the stories of Pompeo and Haley in the book. But perhaps in this time, you only have time to answer this question. Is there a possibility that Trump would ever replace Pence with Haley for political reasons?
No, not from my reporting, Glenn, and I can tell you why. It's first and foremost, the president does really prize loyalty, and no one has been more loyal to Trump than Mike Pence.
Right.
Through thick and thin,
yep,
we have seen that time and again. I just can never see Trump doing that. And I think, secondly, Haley would have zero interest in it. Nikki Haley is very clearly positioning herself to run for president in 2024,
right,
whether that's after a second Trump term or if Trump loses in 2020. Nikki Haley is... it's the worst kept secret in politics. She is very clearly positioning herself, readying her team to get her own presidential campaign off the ground in about 2022. So she would have no interest in joining Trump's ticket.
How is Trump feeling about this coming election? Is he feeling pretty confident? Do you get a sense of anything real?
I think he's confident in watching the Democratic Party right now, that this very large primary field, and frankly, just the sort of cultural and political forces that drove the Republican Party farther to the right over the past decade, that they are now doing the same thing to the Democratic Party, pulling it farther to the left, and that they may ultimately nominate someone who simply does not have the appeal to white working class voters who are going to wind up probably tipping the scales in states like Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And I think that is probably the president's best hope for re-election, because if he can win those three states, then he probably can win re-election. And Democrats have to be very careful not to nominate someone who is outside of the mainstream, somebody who does not have the ability to connect with a lot of those Obama-Trump voters. I think that is what keeps the president optimistic at this point.
Shh. Keep that to yourself, Tim. Keep that to yourself. All right. Tim Alberta from Politico. The name of the book is American Carnage on the Front Lines of the Republican Civil War and the Rise of President Trump. Thank you so much for joining us, Tim. I appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thanks.
God bless.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
That's fascinating stuff, because, I mean, we all went through that together, and it's like a history book about what was going on behind the scenes, you know, in a
and the
story
president
that we were all involved
for this book
at some level. Yeah.
Yeah. The president set for this book, and all of the sources are on record, you know, and he talked to each of the sources one on one. He talked to Pence and everything else. And so it does seem more like a capturing of history at that time, not a gotcha smear book, although there are things in there that I'm sure the president isn't going to like. It's interesting that he was on the phone with the White House this morning as this book comes out.
Yeah.
And they were talking, you know, this morning. Fascinating book. It's American Carnage.
And now here's Glenn and Stu with the next hour.
Thank you so much, Hillary. When they asked me to plan a cruise through history, I got really excited because I knew I could do something really, really special. We could make an amazing experience for you. On the cruise through history, we're going to learn about the founding of America, but we're going to learn it from a different perspective. We're going to learn it from overseas, the things that happened and the mistakes that were made along the way in those civilizations that helped really build us. You're going to see Athens. You'll see Venice. You'll walk with you'll walk with Jesus. I think Jim Caviezel is coming with us. It's going to be a once in a lifetime experience. David Barton will be there. Tim Ballard will be there. Rabbi Lappin will be there. I will be. Stu will be there. Bill O'Reilly. And now maybe Jesus himself, Jim Caviezel. It's going to be something that you don't want to miss. Go to comesailaway.com to learn more about it. Comesailaway.com.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Oh, the sad, sad tale of the squad. We're going to give you the numbers on the squad, meaning the four horsewomen of the apocalypse that are in the in Congress right now that are causing all kinds of problems for the Democratic Party. That's according to the Democratic Party. That's why they leaked an internal poll that shows just how weak these guys are. There is a civil war. But let's not just focus on that. Let's also focus on who these people really are. We begin with the tale of two Ahmeds in 60 seconds.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, new research shows hackers have a thing for the Internet of Things, which is just beginning. The Internet of Things is the Internet security cameras that account for almost half of the smart devices compromised by hackers, the printers, the smart TVs, the IP phones. Those are the real common targets. But soon it'll be your refrigerator and everything else. When 5G comes in, there are a million holes in your walls. The average household contains right now 17 of these kind of smart devices, and many of them have vulnerabilities allowing attackers to remotely access them. So many threats in today's world, and in tomorrow's world, it's going to be worse. You need the people who have been here the whole time and are way ahead of it. It's LifeLock. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can see the threats that you most likely are going to miss. And if they do miss something or you miss something, They're going to work to fix it. They have a crew here in the country that actually works to fix those things. And that's where the rubber really meets the road, because they can call me up and say, hey, you know, this has been stolen from you. OK, so what do I do? They do it. They work to fix it with you. Use the promo code Beck. Save an extra 10% off your first year at 1-800-LIFELOCK, 1-800-LIFELOCK, or go over to lifelock.com. Use the promo code Beck, lifelock.com. I want to spend some time today on AOC and also another member of Congress, part of the squad. Stu is working on looking at all of the poll results that are coming out now, leaked from the Democratic Party, which I find fascinating. He'll give us a look at that coming up in a second. First, let me start with a story of, I like to call it the Tale of Two Ahmads. 3 weeks ago, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, hardly a conservative publication, published a 2,300-word story with updates about the Ilhan Omar scandal. Nothing was said. Now, see if this sounds like a big story to you. A current member of Congress may have married her brother for immigration purposes and tax purposes and then lied about it. The same member of Congress also clearly violated federal and state tax law. Now, this sounds like a supermarket headline, but it is. It's not. It's not coming from a conspiracy theorist website. No, no, no. It's coming from the oh-so-credible Minneapolis Star Tribune. Now, Omar and her representatives, the immunity here is apparently off the charts because the mainstream media will not go near this story. It's not that they don't care, because they would care if it was anybody else. They are making a conscious choice to stay away from this story because perhaps they're part of the squad. But let me give you the headline from the Minneapolis Star Tribune. New documents revisit questions about Representative Ilhan Omar's marriage history. Now, when the story first surfaced in 2016 that she may have married her own brother to get around immigration laws, Omar called it baseless rumors. It's just crazy internet stuff. But last month, as the state of Minnesota investigated campaign finance violations by Omar, it found that she had filed federal taxes in 2014 and 2015 with her current husband, Ahmed Hirsi, even though she was still legally married to a different Ahmed with the last name of Elmi. So the two Ahmeds, and you're going to have to pay close attention here, because there's two Ahmeds. Remember, there's Ahmed Hirsi, her current husband, and Ahmed Elmi. Now, let me walk you through this. From this point, I'm just going to go with the last names of her two husbands, Hirsi and Elmi. Now, this is how Omar's campaign orders her marriage timeline. Listen to this. In 2002, when she was 19, Omar marries Hirsi. That's her current husband. She marries Hirsi. According to the Star Tribune, they married in their faith tradition, those are in quotes, in Minnesota, which means because it's the married in the faith tradition, they didn't file any paperwork, so she wasn't officially married to him. Omar and Hirsi proceed to have two children together over the next 6 years, but then they decide to divorce. But remember, they were never officially married. They just got a divorce in their faith tradition, not a legal divorce because they weren't legally married. The following year, Omar now is 26, and she legally gets married to a different Ahmed, Ahmed Elmi. He's 23. So it was a quick rebound. And this one, she doesn't want to marry in her faith tradition. She marries in the legal tradition. He's 23. She identifies him as a British citizen. Now, according to the Star Tribune, Elmy's school records show he went to high school in St. Paul and attended North Dakota State University. 2 years later, in 2011, Omar and Elmy divorce in their faith tradition. But I thought they were married not in their faith tradition, they were married in the legal tradition. Well, whatever that is, they decide not to legally divorce. So in 2012, Omar gets back together with her first sort of husband, Hersey, you know, the father of her two children. That year, they have a third child together. So she just went off and married somebody else, but got a divorce in the faith tradition, but not really a divorce. Goes back to her husband, who she had a faith divorce. Following year, she gets elected to Minnesota's State House of Representatives. Now, remember, in 2014 and 2015, Omar and Hersey, the faith tradition husband, file joint tax returns, but they're still not legally married. She was still legally married to Ahmed Elmy, so I guess it was just a clerical error. The following year, she gets elected to the Minnesota State House of Representatives, and her campaign is plagued with allegations that Elmy is not just her lover and her husband, but instead her brother that she married for immigration purposes. According to the Star Tribune, new documents reveal efforts by Omar's campaign in 2016 and again in 2018 when she was elected to the U.S. House to keep her marriage to Elmy out of the media. In 2016, Omar's campaign releases the names of six of Omar's siblings, but only their first names, and Ahmed Elmy is not on the list. In 2017, while serving in the Minnesota House, Omar legally divorces Elmy. But I think she's still married to Ahmed, the first one, right? Then there's a small matter of possible perjury, because in her divorce proceedings, Omar claims that she hasn't seen or made contact with Elmy since 2011. That's under oath. Unfortunately, there are social media posts with photos of Omar and Elmy together in London in 2014. Oops. That content was deleted after Omar began running for political office. Now, the Star Tribune says it's been unable to independently obtain the original posts. They say the Star Tribune is skeptical of the posts that are still viewable on what it calls conservative activist sites like PJ Media. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You could easily find out if that picture has been altered. In 2018, before she's elected to Congress, Omar finally legally marries her husband, the first one, Hersey. Hopefully that she has the right Ahmed at the marriage license. I don't know, because the bloggers won't stop talking about it. They're so hateful. The Star Tribune reports that their investigation could, quote, neither conclusively confirm nor rebuke the allegation that Elmy is Omar's sibling. So it's a definite maybe. Omar and Hersey still refuse to answer any questions about the Elmy situation. Elmy now seems to be in Africa, according to social media posts. He's not talking either. But here's the thing. In a separate investigation, the Washington Examiner viewed public documents, including 24 traffic violations and misdemeanor charges against Hersey, that list he and Ilhan Omar's home address as being the same residence from 2009 to 2011. So just to make sure you're totally clear on this, she divorces her husband and the kids, then legally marries another man where they all move into the same house. Okay. Now, that contradicts Omar's claim that she was separated from Hersey during that time frame. According to the public documents, Omar and Hersey lived at the same address when she same address when she legally was married to Elmi, which is weird, very awkward. But hey, Donald Trump hates people, so pay attention to that. Finding out if Elmi is Omar's brother would seem like a pretty easy thing to figure out. But not when your family immigrated to the U.S. from a war-torn country like Somalia that had a bad government record-keeping system. There are no records of birth certificates, so we don't know. Omar won't answer the question about her marriages, and she refused to make her tax and immigration records available to the Star Tribune or any other outlet. Apparently, people who petition the U.S. government for a visa on behalf of a sibling who is not a citizen may have to wait 12 or more years to get one, but applications for spouses are processed much more quickly. Is this what Omar was doing for Elmi, if he is indeed a brother? We still don't know for sure. But regardless of that, we don't know if they're siblings or not. She still broke federal and state laws by filing taxes jointly with Hersey while being legally married to Elmi in the same house. During a deposition before the Campaign Finance and Public Discourse Board last December, Omar said she was unaware that she violated tax law by filing joint married returns with Hersey. She told the board she couldn't remember amending her tax filing to correct the problem either. You know how it is. When you forget that you got married at that one time to that other person who's still living in your house, sometimes it can be very confusing when you're trying to just figure out your taxes. Maybe if you're lucky enough to land on the ideology and intersectionality charts in the same area as Ilhan Omar, where claiming ignorance before a state board will get you off the hook, maybe you'll someday be lucky enough to have that intersectionality, but I doubt most of us will ever be so lucky. The feeling of that check engine light. How long have you been driving with the check engine light on, thinking I'm not going to check you, engine, because I know what it's going to say. Cha-ching, cha-ching. Check engine light, when that comes up, that is, there's a few things that will make your, when you're driving, your butt clenches. That's one of them. You're like, oh, no, I can't. I don't have the money. Don't worry about it. This is why I have Car Shield, and they have saved me thousands of dollars on my old trucks. Now, I have old trucks that are just workhorses and drive them till the doors fall off. If you have a car that is, you know, has 5,000, 150,000 miles on it, and you don't have warranty, you need the extended coverage from Car Shield. When that light comes on, you don't really have to worry about it, because if it's a sensor and it's covered in the repairs, you don't have to worry at all. Don't let the check engine light change your life. Instead, get the ultimate in extended vehicle protection and let that change your life for the better. CarShield.com. Call 800-CAR-6000 and mention the promo code Beck, or visit CarShield.com and use the promo code Beck and save 10%. CarShield.com. Promo code Beck or 1-800-CAR-6000. Mention the code Beck. A deductible may apply. We pause now for 10 seconds. Station ID. It's a Glenn Beck program with our in-house numbers geek, Stu Bergier.
Thank you.
Stu, tell me the poll numbers that suspiciously somebody just made a mistake in the DNC and released.
Under, with anonymity, somehow was able to convince.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting in that any internal poll.
Yeah.
You always have to question, right? Because they only reveal the ones they want you to see, right? So when a campaign is going on, they're saying, actually, we're showing great growth. Well, they may have had five other polls that showed that they had terrible growth, but they wanted you to see the one they had great growth, right? So anytime you hear this, you have to take it with a grain of salt. However, that being said, the fact that the Democrats, or at least a very highly tied Democratic group, is releasing this, is what's really notable here. The polls show that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has a 22% approval rating among Americans.
22% approval rating.
That's
quite
not good. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what you would call in the polling industry not good. She is recognized by 74% of Americans, which is astounding.
Which is really not good.
I mean, that the fact that a freshman congressperson has a 74% of people know who she is remarkable.
There are
probably
people
never before seen.
Never before seen. There are people, maybe, like, I was going to say, maybe Abe Lincoln, or, you know, there is a freshman congressman that did have that.
Okay.
John Quincy Adams.
Okay.
Only because he was president before he ran for Congress.
Yeah, probably.
So, but this is unheard of. And the higher your recognition level is, the more solid that number of likability is.
Right, because people have made their mind up. Right?
Correct.
Now, Ilhan Omar, she's only recognized by 53%, so a little bit less. But still, that's an incredible number. I mean, Seth Moulton, Glenn, running for president right now. Eric Swalwell, running for president right now. Joe Sestak, running for president right now.
People have never heard. I would say they have a name recognition of maybe 2%.
Right.
I mean, maybe.
And they, you know, these are people who are current congressmen, with Sestak's a former congressman, but running for president right now. Tim Ryan. I mean, if you're not in his district, do you know who Tim Ryan is?
Mm-mm.
Probably not.
Mm-mm.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is not in the district of most people. I mean, she's in, you know, she's in New York City, obviously Omar in Minnesota. I mean, these recognition numbers are insane, off the charts. Shows how much attention they've received. However, Ilhan Omar's approval rating is 9%. 9%.
Now think, you would think that the people who like her are the ones who know her. You know what I mean?
Right.
So everybody who knows her, or I should say, everybody who likes her, knows her, okay?
Right.
So her whole fan base is wrapped up in that 9% approval rating.
Right. So maybe she has enough room to grow to 15%,
yeah,
you know, something like that. But there's not a lot there. This group, by the way, also found that socialism was only favored, shown favorability of 18% in the poll, which is very low. And capitalism, 56% favorable. To only 32% unfavorable.
That seems right to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's an interesting thing. I think it was Politico that wrote it up about this controversy with Ilhan Omar and Ocasio-Cortez and Trump in these tweets. And they went down halfway through the story and they're like, well, you know, of course, Ocasio-Cortez was born in America and Ilhan Omar came, you know, immigrated to America. They're U.S. citizens. They go through the reviewing the story. And at the end, also, as an aside, none of the four are socialists. It's like, you need to break that to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who constantly calls herself a democratic socialist. And if you want to say, well, democratic socialism and socialism are different, well, it's like, you know, chocolate chip ice cream and vanilla ice cream are different, but they're both ice cream. Right? It's not a, you know, we're not breaking. She's a self-identified socialist. And even that, she's actually like, it's seen as an unfair attack when she names it about herself.
I want to show you what she actually believes in her office. And we'll talk a little bit more about these polls and what these polls actually may mean. First of all, on the surface, it just means this is an out and out war inside of the Democratic Party. And while there was this war with the Republicans, with the Tea Party, it worked out in favor of the Tea Party. I don't think it's going to end the same way here.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
First Election.
Yeah.
Let me go to Relief Factor. We'll talk about that coming up in a second. I have a great challenge. I really like to paint, but I technically suck at it, and my creativity I think is it's okay, but without Relief Factor I just wouldn't be able to paint at all. I couldn't I couldn't handle the pain. I was on a flight back from New York this weekend, and I thought I was going to crawl out of my skin. I couldn't take the pain on the flight. Millions of people are like this. We all have our own thing. We all have our own pain, and we can whine about it or we can do something about it. And if you feel like you've done everything you can, I feel horrible for you because I know what it's like to live in pain that just won't go away. Relief Factor, however, has made a huge difference in my life and taken away all the pain all the time, but it has greatly reduced it. There are days that I am completely pain-free, and it's because of Relief Factor. I want you to go to ReliefFactor.com and try it. Just try it. You'll get your life back. You really will. I can paint again. ReliefFactor.com.
Joe Biden wants you to know if you like your plan, you can keep it.
Oh my God.
We go through the seven biggest lies from Obamacare tonight on TV. BlazeTV.com/Glenn, promo code Glenn.
Oh, welcome to the program. CNN has breaking news right now. House GOP leaders speak as Trump steps up racist attacks. Ah, okay. All right. Racist attacks. No, what the president said is, if you don't like it here, you don't have to leave. You don't have to live here. You can feel free to move wherever it is you want to go. And Ilhan Omar, if it's so bad here, you're welcome to go home to Somalia. And why would you want to be a citizen of a place that is as evil as you say it is? Where the people just, they see children as less than dogs. Wow. That doesn't sound like America. It does sound like Somalia. But it doesn't sound like America. Now, this is a racist attack to say, if you don't like it here, you're free to move. You are free to move. There are other countries. I don't understand it. Nobody's trapping you here. People are climbing to get in. Not you. You know, when this squad thinks that they can sway the American people, they're in the middle right now of a civil war. And it's the civil war that was already fought by the Republicans. And for a while, The Tea Party won. That first election, the Tea Party won. But the swamp just swallowed them. Now, but that Tea Party, you know, much to the surprise of the media, was about the Constitution. That's what it was about. And when the Tea Party was then swallowed by the Republican Party, that gave birth to Donald Trump. The people who were in the Tea Party said, you know what, we tried it the right way. Well, these people are exactly the people that I lined out for you in the Coming Insurrection book that I talked about while I was at Fox about 2008 and said, look, this is what's happening in France and this is what's going to happen here. The Democrats have lied to the left for 100 years saying, yeah, we're going to progress to, you know, a socialist, non-free market kind of state. You just have to stick with us. Well, once they opened their doors and said, you guys do what you do, we're going to do what we do, we'll work together. Once they did that, the Democrats thought that they were going to be able to control the far left. They didn't realize you don't ever get into bed with revolutionaries. You don't get into bed with people who say, let's burn the entire system down. You can say what you want about Donald Trump, but he doesn't want to burn the entire system down. He wants to end the corruption. That's what his promise was. I'll end the corruption. I'll end all of these people here who just think they're in a party and they don't have to answer to anybody. That's what his promise was. Whether he's done that or not is up for you to decide. But that's what the people who elected him, that's what they elected him for. Not to get rid of the Constitution, not to throw everything out, but to throw the bums out. These people are saying, let's throw the institutions out. And look, the poll number doesn't surprise me that they have anywhere from a 9 to a 20% approval rating. And it should actually give Americans some hope today. When I saw those numbers, that makes me feel good. You know what? All they're doing is they're generating a louder voice on social media. It's just that 20%, if it is even that, are just so prominent on social media. That's their hangout. You know, you go to the neighborhood where the Crips are, you're going to say, wow, this is where I'm surrounded by the gang. Everybody's in the gang. Yeah, well, get out of the neighborhood. Here's how I know they're not with the American people. If you can't condemn a terrorist attack on our border patrol this weekend, if you can't condemn it, you're not with the people. If you're calling for an end of all border controls, just open the floodgates, everyone can come in, and everyone is guaranteed health care. You come into the country, you get free health care. That just doesn't mean our border. That means anybody. I could come from France. I could come anywhere and you get covered health care. Holy cow. When you suggest that we don't have any borders, that we get rid of our law enforcement of, you know, people who are not supposed to be here, border patrols and ICE, you're not with the American people. When you claim that this system doesn't work, maybe you've got a few people with you on both sides. But when you claim the answer is to end the free market, you're not with the American people. When you constantly call all white people who don't agree with you racist and homophobes, people are not with you. When you call every black person that's not with you a racist, a homophobe, an Uncle Tom, the people aren't with you. When you make yourself into a victim every single day, people get sick of victimhood. Nobody wants to follow a victim. You want to follow a leader. You want to follow somebody who's picked themselves up and everybody has tried to take down and you pick yourself up. I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor. I'm a thriver. I'm somebody that can take this bad situation and make it into something great. I'm somebody that no matter how much I'm beaten, I don't start believing the worst in everyone. You make yourself a victim. You set yourself apart from a basic American tenet. We are a Judeo-Christian nation. Whether you believe it or not doesn't matter. It's deep within us now. Jesus was not a victim. Jesus, while they were nailing him to a cross, he was forgiving those. Wait. You're a victim, but Jesus wasn't. You can't forgive, but Jesus could. He led by example. And I know in the Middle East, you know, it doesn't work this way. You don't have your heroes nailed to a cross. But he conquered things in a different way. He conquered things that are deep inside of us today. We have always believed that each man must pay for his sins. That we do not pass the sins of the Father on to the Son. That the way that you are paid for your sins is either you are arrested because you broke the law, or if you broke one of God's laws, you are punished in the afterlife. But somehow or another, you will end up paying for your sins. And to try to make good on that, you have to pay for your sins by asking for forgiveness. But that's not what the squad is asking. The squad is asking us to pay for the sins of people we never met, never knew, to people we have no idea who they even are. We're having to pay for the sins of the great-great-great-great-grandfather, possibly, most likely, of somebody else. That's un-American. It goes against everything that we used to say was common sense. I can't make up for something that my great-great-grandfather did, or in my case, did not do. My great-great-grandfather, both of them were fighting for the Union, against the Confederacy. One of them died in the notorious prison camp in the South. Who's going to pay for him? Who's going to pay for his lost life? Nobody. Nobody. He had to pay for his sins. He had to pay for his actions. And he paid a high price for his actions, even though those actions were trying to free other people. I can't believe that Nancy Pelosi is giving so much time to these people. She's afraid of the activists. She's afraid of the very small number of people who will burn it down. The very small number of people who are in places like Antifa who will go out and take action and will address their comrades as comrades and make this sacrifice of their life so the red flag can further on. And I end where I began. If you can't condemn that, you are not with the American people. Back in the saddle here in Dallas, spent a week up in New York, did not have my X chair, and I don't like it when I don't have my X chair. I get grumpy when I don't have my X chair.
Because it's soothing your back in the wonderful way you're used to. I mean, you're used to being pampered, Mr. Beck.
Well,
you know, you need to be coddled a little bit.
No, yes and no. I mean, I'm not being coddled by this. I'm sitting in a chair that I've learned my lesson, and I didn't spend a whole lot of money on something that everybody said, oh, it's great, and it is the chair of the century. Shut up. It sucks. I instead got an X chair, which is great, and you can afford it at any wallet size. It fits your body shape and it fits your wallet size as well, because you can get the X1, which is the basic, all the way to the X basic to the X1 or the X4, which has really high grade leather and everything else. They're great chairs. I don't really care about the leather. We got the mesh one. I don't care about that. I care about the comfort level of it. And it is a great, great chair. But if Stu wants to relinquish his chair,
I believe treat yourself is the way. That's their new slogan. X chair, treat yourself.
Don't think that is their slogan, but I'll let it slip this time. Okay. Get $100 off right now at xchairbeck.com. That's xchairbeck.com, or you can call 844-4XCHAIR, 844-4XCHAIR, or xchairbeck.com. $100 off, and if you use the promo code XWheels, you're going to get the super fancy upgraded wheels on the bottom of the chair as well. It's xchairbeck.com. Let me go back to Stu on fundraising numbers. He's been watching how the candidates are doing raising funds. What are you seeing? What are you noticing?
Well, obviously, Donald Trump is raising more than anybody. He's the only candidate really on the Republican side, so he's leading everybody by a large margin. The interesting stuff is on the Democratic side, where Pete Buttigieg had an amazing quarter, almost inexplicable compared to where he is. I mean, who's, you know,
nobody
pretty solidly
fifth.
Do people
really think that he's going to win the nomination?
They certainly are giving him the financial resources to do it. I mean, he outraised everybody on the Democratic side. And he's pretty clearly in fifth place right now. I mean, he's ahead of the second, third tier candidates, but he's behind the front runner.
Isn't he the John Kasich of this particular, where he's like, people who are not paying any attention at all are like, oh, I like him. He's kind of a normal guy. And then when you get to know him, you're like, no, I don't think he should be president.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, we'll see. I think he has really big support from people like former Obama officials. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of that support. Mm-hmm. He was very early identified by Obama as someone with up and coming potential. And so he, I mean, that's an incredible haul of $24.8 million, which led the entire field. Bernie Sanders had, I think, 18. He had a transfer, so technically he led with $25.7 million, but it was more like money from his Senate campaign that kind of came over. Biden's number was pretty good at $22 million. It wasn't a full quarter, too, so he may have led if he had been around for the first, for the full quarter, but he should be out raising a guy like Buttigieg without even trying. Elizabeth Warren is pretty interesting. Her numbers are pretty solid. She's not spending a ton of money. It's almost all coming from smaller donors. She's got a good machine right now. She's in a good spot. I mean, much better than I would have predicted with her.
I would have thought Pocahontas was out.
I know. After that debacle.
Oh, my gosh.
Kamala Harris numbers were okay, about $12 million. So she was kind of in, you know, the bottom end of that top tier. A lot of this happened, obviously, you know, she didn't have a lot of time after the debate, which was her big moment where she rose in the poll. So we'll see how that affects her future fundraising. A couple other minor ones as you go down this list. A lot of people are going to say the big takeaway on the bad side is Beto O'Rourke, who raised $9 million in the first quarter and almost all of it in the first couple of days when he announced, like seven in the first couple of days. Did $9 million for the whole quarter last time, only did $3 million for this quarter. That's 3.6, a terrible number, huge fall off. He's spending more money than he's taking in. I think he spent $5 million and only brought in 3.6 for the quarter. This is a disastrous, like, death spiral that his campaign is in.
Gee, who would have seen this coming?
I actually think there is a worse number in this field. To me, the worst number is Bill de Blasio. Now, de Blasio, think of who this man is.
Yeah.
He is a man who controls the sway of the everyday life of the financial center of the world, right? A city filled with rich Democrats.
Yes.
And he brings in only $1.1 million for the quarter. Now, it wasn't the entire quarter, but he had almost the same amount of time to raise money as people like Michael Bennett, who, again, who's Michael Bennett? If you're not in Colorado, you might not know the answer to that. He's a senator. He raised $3.5 million in basically the same amount of time. I mean,
disaster.
De Blasio, hate this guy.
They hate him in New York already. He's a disaster.
He's just
a disaster.
Yeah. A lot of people, though, struggling. And you're going to see this next. I think today is the day they come out with who's in the next debate, the second debate. The third debate, though, is going to be almost impossible for these people to make. And we're going to see this thing go down to about 10 candidates or less really fast in the next few weeks.
Well, I'm Hillary. That's your 4 minute buzz. And now here's Glenn and Stu with our last hour.
Yay. Oh, so glad that you're here. Thank you so much. Want to talk to you a little bit about Relief Factory, Relief Factor. It's a way for you to be able to get yourself out of pain without any kind of drugs. They are 100% natural, created by doctors, 100% drug free. It's a 3 week quick start that they ask you to try. And that's what I did. I tried it for 3 weeks. I didn't think it was going to work, quite honestly. And then when it did, a few months later, it was still working. I'm like, you know, I'll go on the record saying that these guys are great. This really changed my life.
You are kind of an expert on this. So does Relief Factor get made at the Relief Factory? Because that's a
great... It does.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
All right.
What a jerk. 800-500-8384. Just sign up for their 3 week quick start. 70% of the people who take it go on to order more month after month because it does work. ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Do it now.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
Well, we have told you the story that the really good investigative journalist, an award-winning investigative journalist, John Solomon, first really broke the news about Joe Biden and his son and the corruption. Well, he wants some Freedom of Information Act. He wants some documents from the Department of State. Well, they strangely are blocking him, and they won't give him the information that he needs to be able to do his argument and to be able to find out the truth on what is happening in his ongoing effort to expose fraud if it is there. Well, now he's decided they are blocking me every turn. I have to sue them. We'll talk to John Solomon in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Tecovas boots. These are the best Western style boots that you can that money can buy. Honestly, they, I mean, you can spend thousands of dollars on boots, and good luck with that. Or you could buy really crappy cowboy boots, and good luck with that, because they don't fit right, and they're horrible. Or you can go to Tecovas, and Tecovas makes boots on Western wear that is there's something that you can wear with a suit. And something that you can wear out on the farm or the ranch. You can wear out on a Friday night, or you can just wear them while you're running around town doing stuff. They are great boots, and they are half the price of what you would pay for boots that are made with this high quality. They're all hand-stitched. They're all high-quality leathers and, you know, the different skins that you can get. And you can get them online, and that's how they have made them so inexpensive compared to the boots in their class. So what you need to do is you need to go to tecovas.com/back. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S, tecovas.com/back, and order a pair for yourself. Now, it's money-back guarantee. If they don't fit right, whatever, you can ship them back. But they are built to last. They are built the right way. They're 200 steps to make each one of these boots. So they are really, really high quality at about half the price. Tecovas.com/back. Get it online right now. Pick out your pair. Have them send them to you. You're going to love them. They'll fit you perfectly like a glove the first time. If they don't, customer is always right at Tecovas.com. Tecovas.com/back. John Solomon is an award-winning investigative journalist. He is the executive vice president at The Hill. He previously worked for the Associated Press, The Washington Post, and The Washington Times. He is a guy who has been following this story about Joe Biden and his son from the beginning, and he's getting blocked. But I want to start, John, with give a summary of what you're looking for and what the story is for people who haven't been following it.
That's a great idea. Thanks, Glenn. So there is a pattern when Joe Biden was vice president of his son Hunter kind of following in the vapor trail and cashing in on his father's official government portfolio. 2013, Joe Biden goes to China for an official government trip. Hunter Biden goes on the plane with him, comes back with a $1 billion contract from Chinese officials.
It's crazy.
That's a big number. In 2014, Hunter Biden, who admits he has a long-running drug problem and was kicked out of the Navy for testing positive for cocaine, he's in a kind of difficult period of his life. He just got kicked out of the Navy. 2014, Joe Biden is named Obama's point man for the crisis in Ukraine after the Russians invaded Crimea. What happens? Joe Biden gets working in Ukraine. All of a sudden, Ukraine's largest natural gas company puts Hunter Biden on its board and begins paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars a month, or at least his company hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. He collects about $3 or $4 million himself, or his company does, in the final 2 years of the Obama administration. So Hunter Biden, again, cashing in on his father's government portfolio.
Well, now, wait a minute. The gas and oil company might have needed somebody who was directly out of rehab, had no gas or oil experience, and couldn't speak the language. They may have been looking for somebody just like that.
Sounds like a good resume pitch.
It does. It does.
Yeah, I think you've caught the suspicion right on its head. And we weren't alone, right? The Ukrainian prosecutors, the General Prosecutor's Office of Ukraine, began to look into the fact, why is this American with no gas experience but with lots of political connections getting these millions of dollars? And in late 2015, they were preparing to interview Hunter Biden. Why are you taking this money? What's it being used for? What's the benefit to the Ukraine economy?
Stop for a second. Are you sure? Yeah. Do you have the proof that is what they were going to interview him about?
I do indeed. I've interviewed the prosecutor who actually was going to conduct the interview, a guy named Shokin, and I have the official case file that the general prosecutors had that showed or declared their interest in seeking to interview Joe Biden about the payments he was receiving as an American board member. So that is not in dispute. And recently, Shokin gave the same story to ABC News and confirmed my earlier reporting to ABC News. So it's been given now in two clear media outlets that that was the case. So Joe Biden then proceeds to force the Ukrainian president to fire this prosecutor. And we know Biden did this because Biden bragged himself on a videotape. He did it. He said, I told the Ukraine president, you don't fire that prosecutor, you don't get your $1 billion in loan guarantees in March 2016. Well, Ukraine was on the brink of financial collapse. If the U.S. had pulled that $1 billion in loan guarantees, it would have collapsed. And so it was a very powerful threat by Joe Biden. And sure as heck, the prosecutor is fired by the president in March of 2016. Now, Joe Biden's story is, I didn't know he was under investigation, and I certainly didn't fire the prosecutor because my son was in some form of jeopardy. We want to test that theory because our sources indicate that during this entire time while this was going on, Burisma and Hunter Biden and others were having contacts with the U.S. government and possibly the State Department. Makes sense. If you're an American overseas being investigated by a foreign power, you might turn to your State Department to get help. That's what the State Department's there for. Those are the documents we're seeking to test whether Joe Biden and Hunter Biden's story to the American public, now that Joe Biden is running for president, is true and accurate. And we have reason to believe that there are documents that show contacts between Hunter Biden, Burisma, and others, and their representatives, including an American lobbying firm named Blue Star Strategies, that they were having contacts with the State Department and letting the U.S. government know this prosecutor was putting pressure on them, and that might have preceded Joe Biden's decision to get the prosecutor fired. So that's why we're suing, and with the good help of the Southeastern Legal Foundation, we now have a lawsuit in front of a federal judge, and hopefully we'll get the American public some transparency.
When are they supposed to rule on this? How long will it take?
Well, my experience with FOIA lawsuits, they take anywhere from 4 months to a year. If you're lucky, it'll be 4 months. If it's not, it'll be closer into the middle of the election year next year. But whenever it comes out, I think it will be valuable information. And there are elements of Joe Biden's public story that he's now crafted as a candidate for 2020 that simply don't match up to the documents and facts that I have. And we want to find out what the real truth is. So whether it's, you know, a few months from now or the middle of the campaign next year, we're sticking with it, and we're going to get the truth.
So you don't have, you have a lot of loyalty to the Clinton camp, the Biden camp, the Obama camp in the State Department, and not a lot of loyalty to anybody that wants to upset that. How confident are you that these documents will still be producible, will be there?
That they're there. Yeah, well, the good thing is that under the Federal Records Act, most official government documents, Hillary Clinton's emails aside, because they were on a private server, they get preserved. And they get preserved in so many different ways, it's very difficult to make them disappear. We have a pretty good sense that these documents do exist now. I've had sources access some of them and give me a general sense of what is in them. Mm. So we will be able to identify for the court, if there's any shenanigans, what we believe these documents were, the dates of them, and what they are believed to say. My guess is that the State Department wasn't prepared for me to go to court and try to compel this, much like the State Department wasn't prepared to produce the document we found a few months ago, thanks to Dave Bossi and Citizens United. We produced the famous document of the State Department meeting with Christopher Steele 1 month before Election Day 2016, and of course that document has become so important to the Russia investigation that the IG report on Steele and FBI misconduct was delayed. So sometimes these lawsuits work, and you get real important information that changes the course of history, and we hope to do that with this Ukraine document now.
How? What does that say to you that you, through a tip, could produce a document on this Russia investigation that the
pretty remarkable
the Inspector General couldn't find, yeah, or couldn't produce? What does that say?
Wasn't given. Well, it says two things. One, the Christopher Wray FBI is still in a game of obstruction of trying to stop these reviews from finding the true conduct of the FBI. For whatever reason, whether it's sources and methods or otherwise, the FBI and the State Department both possess these documents. And neither one of them turned them over to any of the reviews. None of the congressional reviews or House Intelligence, Senate Intelligence knew anything about the document until we surfaced it. We knew that from Devin Nunes, from others on the Senate side. So what it does mean is you got to be thorough, right? You've got to use every lever of power you have to try to force these bureaucrats to give up information that is rightfully the American public. When you look at the document they withheld in the State Department, there was nothing sensitive or classified about it. It was just simply embarrassing to the FBI and the State Department, and they played a game of keep away, which doesn't benefit us all. And I think this pattern of keep away, particularly with Chris Wray at the helm of the FBI, is becoming more and more troubling. I think it's might have been one of the reasons why Attorney General Barr made some comments recently that he wasn't getting the answers he intended to get in the Russia probe. There is something going on between the Bureau and its overseers that is frustrating to those trying to get to the truth.
And how do you think all this ends? Do you think we're headed for a place of real conflict with the truth, and it's either all going to come out or it's going to go deeper inside and it's going to become a real dangerous infection. Which way do you think it's leaning?
I think because of the good work of Bill Barr and the Attorney General and his determined nature to get to the bottom of this, I think we are going to get to the truth. And he's got a lot of smart people around him that are providing him information. Devin Nunes, Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, people who went head-to-head with the FBI the last 2 years and kind of know where the bodies are buried and where the truth still is being withheld. And I think the determination of Bill Barr will be the winning factor for all of us getting the truth. I can tell you later today, I hope to report a story that will hopefully put an end to this silly love affair that goes on and off between the news media and Christopher Steele. In the last week, we've had some stories come out suggesting, hey, maybe Christopher Steele was credible after all. He had a great interview with the IG, and maybe we have it all wrong. Maybe this whole thing that Republicans are talking about, that the Russia case was flawed, is just a ruse, and he's going to turn out to be redeemed at the end of this. I'm going to have a story today that I think will put a stake in the heart of those hopes. Mm-hmm. There's an FBI spreadsheet that kept over-under on each sentence in the Steele dossier. When you see how far off the FBI found Christopher Steele's claims, you'll understand why that dossier should never have been used as evidence in the support of a FISA. So we'll be breaking that later today. Sort of revelations make a big difference to getting the American people the truth.
One last question, and I know it's unfair because I doubt that you have done anything on it. I just wanted your gut reaction on what is being said about Jeffrey Epstein. That there are these rumors going around that he may have been an intelligence officer or asset of some sort.
Yeah, I haven't seen. I've done some reporting on the Epstein case, particularly back in 08, 09 when the original deal was consummated to get him off the hook. I have never seen that. Now, it is not uncommon, however, for businessmen who travel frequently to be contacted by the CIA or the NSA or the DIA for information. Hey, you're on a travel. You met with these foreign people. Could you tell us, and you know, to help your country, what you found out? Is there anything that we should know about? Mm-hmm. That's a very common practice, but there's a big step from going to that and being somebody like a Christopher Steele that had a signed contract with the United States government. Mm-hmm. I think the real factor lies in the judgments that were made by the Justice Department in the 08-09 timeframe.
John, thank you so much, and we'll look for your report today, and of course, give us an update on whatever is happening with your lawsuit trying to get information out of the State Department. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
John Solomon. Kind of makes you feel good that somebody out there is winning a few.
And a real reporter following up on this stuff.
Yeah, really doing it. If that comes out next summer, I mean, they'd be best just to get that out right now. You know, the State Department, if they have the information on Joe Biden, get it out right now. He has no chance of survival after summer. Do you think?
Well, that might be why Biden would want it out. There's a lot of other Democrats there that would not be.
Yeah.
You know, they want to take him down now. Biden might want to get it out now just to get it out of the way if he can hold on to the actual nomination. But I mean, it's not just Democrats you're dealing with here, right? Like this.
Yeah, and you're also looking at people who know the longer you hold it, the less important it becomes.
Yep.
All right. Final plans for the cruise through history have been made, and they are incredible. Yesterday on this program, I found out that Tim Ballard is coming from Operation Underground Railroad. And there's a new film being made. I think it's maybe Paramount. I don't remember who's making it, but they're making it on this particular group, Operation Underground Railroad. And the guy who plays Tim in the movie is Jim Caviezel, the guy who played Jesus in the Passion of Christ. So we were talking, and they're going to show a special viewing on the ship of that movie. And I think Jim Caviezel is coming. So we're adding two other passengers to the boat. You can walk the Holy Land with Jesus. That might freak a few people out. Hey, yeah, look who just showed up, huh? Anyway, you can join us for this unbelievable trip, a cruise through history. Please, Friday is the last day you can get the early bird special, which I think knocks about $400 off of it. It is an all-inclusive trip, including airfare, gratuities. It's a great value. We're going to go to Greece, Italy, Croatia, and also the Holy Land. So join us. Make sure you're there. ComeSailAway.com. Go now. ComeSailAway.com. 10 seconds, station ID. Stu, what else do we have to do today? I mean, we've already prayed with Marianne Williamson for forgiveness.
We did.
Which was good.
I don't think we can let this day go by, though, without really examining Joe Biden.
Did you just say Dago? You did.
That's not Dago.
Oh, my gosh. You said it again. What are you doing?
San Diego.
Okay, Mr. Oh, my gosh. Stop with the racial.
I'm not.
Oh, my. What a racist.
I'm just trying to
HR. All right, go ahead.
We can talk to HR because maybe they'll be able to tell us whether we'll be able to keep our health insurance. I know Joe Biden has informed us about this. Mm-hmm. And you'd think someone would be self-aware enough to be able to stop yourself from saying this exact phrase that beat you up so many times.
Right.
If you like your plan, you keep your plan.
You know, in watching it, I did think he was going to stop himself.
Yeah, you almost get the sense that he consciously decided to go for it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yep, I'm going.
Yeah.
All right, so here it is. Listen to this audio.
How many of you like your employer-based health care? Did you think it was adequate? Now, if I come along and say, finish, you can't have it anymore. Well, that's what Medicare for All does. You cannot have it, period. Number one. There's a hiatus spot in between, by the way, how long it's going to take. So I leave people the option. If you like your health care plan, your employer-based plan, you can keep it.
I don't know if he did it consciously or not. It's not a good decision. It was the lie of the year.
Lie of the year.
Famously, not by a right-wing organization. But
I think it was Politico, wasn't it?
It was PolitiFact.
PolitiFact,
Lie of the year.
Lie of the year. By the way, there are several big lies, and we're going over all of them tonight. Is it the seven biggest lies?
Yes.
The seven biggest lies of Obamacare tonight in a special you don't want to miss on Blaze TV.
This is one I've been particularly fired up about because here are these 25 candidates, or it was 26. We did lose Eric Swalwell last week.
Mm-hmm.
God rest his campaign soul.
Yeah. I didn't have a soul. That was the problem.
Okay, that was kind of the problem. 26 candidates, and all of them are saying our health care is the biggest concern in the United States. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, you guys are the ones that passed Obamacare and were supposed to solve all of this.
Right.
We're only a few years after that started, and here we are, in your words, saying we have to remake the entire system again.
Right.
And I'm fascinated by that. I mean, the only person who's really defending it at all is the person you just heard, Joe Biden. And he's saying he wants massive changes to it. Shockingly, some of the changes that we said they would go for immediately once they passed Obamacare.
Medicare for all?
Yeah, Medicare for all, single payer, and illegal immigrants, and
no,
abortion covered, and all these things.
Theorists.
So I'm fascinated on this because, and I would love to see the ones that you've found, because the idea that we're going to trust the same people who just told us for a new healthcare system is part one of my frustration. And part two is conservatives were destroyed in this era, 2009, 2010, 2011, of being hate mongers and racists and all of these other things, because we said, you know what? What they're going to do is pass this, and then right away they're going to turn around and ask for single payer because they're going to say this wasn't enough. Well, here we are. They're doing exactly what we said they would do. Exactly.
That's why it's important for you to see these lies. And you see what they said then and what they're saying now. It's actually happening a three-part series this week. Sign up for The Blaze. You don't want to miss this. Go to blazetheblazetv.com, theblazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn and you'll save 10%. We'll see you tonight at 5.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
All right, let me tell you about cyber criminals. They're unrelenting. They don't sleep, and they're happening all over the world. I mean, they've got people. When people are awake over here, they're working to get your information. When the sun goes down here, you got people in Russia working to get your information. You need a secure VPN because it's not just the cyber criminals that are after your information. It's also all of the data warehouses. I mean, you got it from the NSA, but I worry more. I can't believe I'm saying this. I worry more about Facebook and Google and Amazon and everybody else that's tracking your every move. I don't like it. I own who I am. I own my data. I'll give it to you for a price. And no, thank you. Convenience is not a high enough price. Norton.com/VPN. Stop the data collection on you. Get a VPN, a virtual private network. It's easy to use. You download an app, put in the passcode once, and then you're on a virtual private network. Norton.com. Prices start at about $3 a month. If you sign up for a year, it is Norton.com/VPN.
So to get $10 off your subscriptions, you can watch the Obamacare series all week. It's blazetv.com/Glenn. Just use the promo code Glenn.
Welcome to the program, the Glenn Beck program. We're so glad you're here. I've got a big show for you tonight you don't want to miss. If you've missed any of today's show, we covered a whole lot of stuff, all the stuff in the news. You can find it wherever you get your podcast for the day. Just go to iTunes or whatever and sign up for the podcast. Or you can also get it at blazetv.com, blazetv.com/Glenn.
I saw Russell Crowe talking about you.
You saw Russell Crowe talking about me. Are you watching The Loudest Voice?
The Loudest Voice.
The Loudest Voice.
Yeah.
Loudest the book voice. Is The Loudest Voice in the room. Room.
Right.
This is the Showtime series that they were all so excited about on the left that no one is watching.
Yeah, it was pretty bad results for ratings.
I think it was the lowest miniseries, lowest rating original series that they have ever put on the air.
Yes. So yeah. It's not so working out so great so far.
So it's just ever.
Though it is, I would say, you know, I mean, look, it's very unfavorable to Roger Ailes, the guy who put Fox News together. So that's
have
what
you
the
watched
series
it?
Is about. I watched the first episode and I've bits and pieces of the others.
Okay, so I've watched the first two episodes and bits and pieces of the third. I think I start to make an appearance next episode.
Well, you kind of made your first appearance in the most recent episode. In just a bit piece. And I actually, they said one of the nicest things I've ever heard anyone say about you in it. the scene basically is they're trying to find a new host. And they come in and they present you as a potential host for Fox News. Mm-hmm. And Roger Ailes reacts to your photograph in a way. I thought it was certainly nicer than most people talk about you. Here it is.
Peck's agent sent this over.
Jesus. An armadillo with a hairpiece. Can't argue with the ratings. I mean, he took a black hole at CNN and turned it to 600K in the demo. I mean, and he hates Obama. Set up a meeting.
So, yeah, you look like an armadillo with a hairpiece.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't.
I've never seen an armadillo with a hairpiece.
I have a pot. I put up a. Maybe we could get this made. Mm-hmm. Can we get this made for social media? An armadillo with a hairpiece, and put
you.
It next to Glenn, like a side by side. Because I don't see it that much. And it, and the funny thing about you is you actually have your own hair, which most people
would
not believe.
But I always think that it looks like a hairpiece.
Used to say you were the only person with their real hair that looks like they're wearing a hairpiece.
Yeah,
that was because if I remember correctly, you had blonde hair on the sides and gray hair on the top.
Yes, so it didn't look... I mean, most people, they have the gray hair on the sides come in first. I had the gray hair on the top come in. Right. So I looked like a reverse skunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated it. I just hated it. And then it all went white, and I still hate it. But, you know.
But it is yours.
But
like,
it's mine.
Not
it's all
a
mine.
Piece. Yeah.
It's all mine.
Now, whether you're part armadillo or not, I can't answer for that.
Well,
one.
I did do the DNA test with 23andMe. I did not see any armadillo in
you
me.
You did see Asian land bridge, though.
Yes, I did.
So easily an armadillo could have walked across that.
Or rolled.
Or rolled across.
Or rolled across. So you don't know.
They did a reference. Mm-hmm. The ratings success over at CNN Headline News, which was fun to hear.
So what have you what have you thought about this portrayal of Roger?
I mean, it's very negative in that the part. I have not seen a lot of the sexual abuse sort of stuff, which I know they get into later on.
So I saw part of that, I think, in this last one, maybe, and it's really ugly.
But
it's like really ugly.
Sure, but Russell Crowe does a pretty good Roger.
Like he does. I mean, think he looks like him. He
walks like him.
Walks just like him.
Yeah, I mean,
and it was, and you know, they're trying to make him sound. They're trying to make him sound like some horrible, horrible human being on his political stuff. But there's stuff where, like, he's up with Rupert Murdoch, and he's like, "I'm telling you, this guy is a Marxist." "Oh, Roger, stop it, stop it." "I'm telling you, he's a Marxist." Well, I'm like, yeah, all right. You know, there's a lot of stuff in there that's really, really bad. But there's also some of the stuff that they're putting out there going, "See, look what a hate monger he is." And I'm like, no, he was right.
And at some level,
right,
I think also in the book, and they do give him credit for being a visionary. I mean, there's no question about it. He figured out things.
You'll see the genius. I mean, one of the things they tried to make it look bad was he said, "We are going to give the American people the America they want to believe in, as well as the America as it truly is." Well, what's wrong with that?
Like a positive vision.
It's an
for the
aspirational
future,
right? Look, we're going to tell you we are these people, and we can achieve this kind of greatness. But here we are today. This is what we're doing today. That's just having a positive attitude, as I read it.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to say he's lying, right? He's saying no. The America they want it to be is the America where, you know, immigrants are ruining their lives, and it's not their fault. And
sucks.
You know,
like, nobody who wants that.
If you who would want that? Yeah.
Who'd want that? Who'd watch that day and day? Just ask the four people that are remaining watching CNN.
Right.
You know, nobody wants to be told they suck all the time. You can be told, "Hey, we suck right now, but we don't have to suck because we got a bright future in front of us." Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that.
No. I mean, that's a positive. It's interesting to see that. And they go into, you are going to have a meeting with Roger Ailes, I guess, in the next episode, or at least they're going to.
I don't think they do that.
I don't know if they're going to go into that much detail.
The meeting with Roger was, I had three meetings, didn't I?
I can't remember how many there were.
I can't remember. I only remember really the last one. We had three meetings. And the first one, he was just like, "Hey, just wanted to get to know you, blah, blah, blah." And didn't talk about a job or anything else. And then we had another meeting where they had started talking about a job, and I had said, "No, I'm not interested, but I'll meet with you." And so I met with him, and I made the mistake of saying that I read his Wikipedia page. And he said, the first thing he said was, "Oh, great, we've got a genius that thinks Wikipedia is reliable." And I was like, oh, boy. And then he asked me, he sat down, didn't say anything. And I'm just trying to, you know, "Hey, so not nice restaurant, huh?" And he's sitting there, and he said, the television is on behind him. And he looked up to, I think, Bill Shine, who was at the table. And he said, "She's not smiling, is she?" And Bill looks up at the TV monitor behind Ailes and says, "No, she's not." He said, "You can hear it. Tell her to GD smile." And it was like, and I was like, "Holy mother, what am I doing?"
Because, I mean, you're talking about going on, and I mean, you could barely read, let alone
broadcast
competently.
I don't do television. Right. You know, he doesn't understand. No, that was my first job. I've never even done live television before.
Right.
Okay. And he says, now in our first meeting, he says to me, "You're the most talented television performer since Jack Parr." Now, that means something to me. Maybe it won't mean something to most people, but Jack Parr started The Tonight Show, and he was a storyteller. And he's like, you're the most talented since Jack Parr. Now, this meeting, none of that was around.
Well, now
he was not remembering any of that stuff, you know?
Now that he started to actually think about negotiating with you, he can no longer give you broad compliments.
And so he said to me, tell her to DD smile. And then he just looks down his menu, and nobody says anything for at least, it felt like an hour, but it was probably about a minute. And then he looks up over his menu, and he's pretending to see what, you know, he's going to eat. Maybe he really is, but he looks up over his glasses and he says, "Tell me what you thought about the 1972 China-Nixon treaty." And I was like, don't, you know what, Roger? I'm
is that the one Forrest Gump was at?
Yeah, I know. I thought of some really funny things, and I didn't think he would laugh. No. And I said, you know, Roger, I'm not up on the 72 treaty. Sorry. Oh, he looks back down his menu. Then he looks up about, seemed like another hour. And then he looks up again and he said, "Well, tell me about Eisenhower. What were your thoughts of the policies of the Eisenhower administration?" And I hadn't, I hadn't read anything about Eisenhower at the time. And I'm like, and I looked at him and I smiled and I said, "You know, Roger, I could go one of two ways here. I could bluff, but I have a feeling you're way too sharp to bluff. Or I could possibly end this interview right now by saying, I got no idea. Not my area of expertise. I think I'm going with that one." He went, "Hmm." Then he didn't speak to me until the food arrived. Okay.
So you sat there in silence from the order time?
In silence. Then he said to me, "You're one of those Mormons." I thought, oh, God.
This is a good meeting.
Yeah, this is going really well. And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "What was so wrong with the GD Catholic Church that you had to leave the church?" And I thought, oh, my gosh, I don't know what to even do here. And I said, well, you know, and I talked to him. And then he just kept asking me question, hard question after hard question. I realized about 90 minutes into it, when I had lost about 10 pounds of sweat, I realized he is only throwing me up against an electric fence to see how I react. All he's doing is, how are you? Because you're going to go on. I've been watching you. You're going to go on and you're going to say the things that you believe, and you're going to be strapped to an electric chair. How do you handle it? Now, he never said that to me, but that's what I was figuring towards the end. And I don't remember what the last question was, but it was 2 hours of just nonstop grilling, no niceties at all. And the two people that were also at the table, they weren't helping me because they were like, you know, Roger had obviously said, "Stay still." And he just took me on for two solid hours. And, so he said, "You want any dessert?" And I'm like, "No, I think I'm good." I never pass up dessert, but I'm good. And I put the fork down and get up and I put my coat on, and he doesn't say anything. He puts his coat on and he comes up to me and he puts his hand on my shoulder and he puts his hand out and he said, "It was really nice sitting talking to you." And I didn't know what to say. And I was like, "Oh, no, this has been great." And he said, "It's extraordinarily rare to meet a man who has the balls to say what he really believes, and even more so to admit what he doesn't know. I enjoyed this. Thank you." Walked away. I was like, I think I passed. I don't have any idea. That's the way my relationship with Roger Ailes started. And it was very much like that in many ways. I didn't ever know what he was really doing.
You just, when you talked to me, you just sent me to McDonald's and asked me to get you an Egg McMuffin. It's a much different interview process.
I didn't. Can you, do you know the way to find a McMuffin? Yes, you're hired. What did you think about the idea of not serving breakfast 24 hours a day? All right. Sponsor.
We're totally aligned on that one. Yeah, luckily.
Oh, I've got an update on that. Really pissed me off. I went to a McDonald's last week at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I got to talk to you about it. Anyway, stock market has been on an amazing trajectory for the last several months. I believe, you know, I happen to believe in a meltdown, a melt up. I believe it's going to continue to go up until it just can't go up anymore. And then it's called a melt up, different than a meltdown. But that's just me. I'm a worry wart. I've been reading a lot of stuff that's very positive on the economy as well. I don't know. And that's why I have insurance. Gold. We are living in unprecedented times. They're doing things with money that man has never done before. Man usually figures it out too late that, oh, that's why this principle we always lived with for thousands of years. And that principle is gold. Call Goldline now and see if gold or silver is right for you. I buy it not only as an investment, it's been a good investment for me, but I buy it as an insurance policy against insanity, and the world is insane. Please have something left over when everyone else has nothing. Put a portion of your savings into gold or silver. Call Goldline now. Goldline, goldline.com. Easy way to do it is just call them, 866-GOLDLINE. There's no high pressure or anything. They'll just send you all this information to find out if it's right for you. 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com. Hey, don't forget, tonight at 5 o'clock, we're going to go into the 7 biggest lies of Obamacare, and it's important to go over them. Because people like Joe Biden were on the road yesterday saying things like this.
I'm old.
No, they're like this.
Employer-based health care. Oh. Did you think it was adequate? Now, if I come along and say, finish, you can't have it anymore. Well, that's what Medicare for All does. You cannot have it, period.
We all know that.
Number one. There's a hiatus spot in between, by the way, how long it's going to take. So I leave people the option. Uh-huh. If you like your health care plan, now, your employer-based plan, you can keep it.
Ah. Hmm. Why did he correct himself on your health care plan, your employer-based health care plan? Did you notice that? That's where the correction came in.
Hmm. I mean, my thought was he's not referring to the people who are already on Obamacare or people who are already on government assistance, right? He's talking about people who have, you know, health care through their job.
Could be, but he's also a guy who... was there to know that was a lie, and I can't believe he's doing it again.
It's also a guy that was there for the War of 1812.
Yes,
which is
he was there the whole
that.
Time. Yeah, he was there.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't miss it. Tonight's 3-part series tonight on the Blaze TV. BlazeTV.com. BlazeTV.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn and save $10. By the way, just wanted to throw this in. I was at McDonald's last week. It was like 1:30 in the morning, and. I'm just going by, and we're joking, you know, can I get breakfast? Of course you can get breakfast, 24 hours. Then I said, I'd like a Filet-O-Fish, please. And they said, sorry, we stopped making Filet-O-Fish at midnight.
Oh, so they don't have dinner the whole time. You can't get a burger for breakfast, in other words.
Wait a minute. Why not? Why can't I? You can do it the other way.
Right.
Why can't I also get
bastards.
Dinner? Oh, man.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.